Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to another edition of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney from Deason, Garner, and Hanson, in studio here with Thomas Sparks, Adam Hanson, and Cody Beeson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam recently returned from his trip of transporting the casket of his mother to Utah.
Utah, yeah.
And it was an eventful trip, or at least not as eventful as it could have been, which is a good thing, but eventful in other ways. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so if you remember, you listeners that are our diehard fans that listen, all three of you, if you remember a few episodes back, we talked. Cody and I talked about this, my plans of moving my mom's remains from Wilcox, Arizona, where we grew up. That's where she died in 1989. So 35 years ago, she died. I was 6 years old at the time. I'm the youngest of four boys. And so my oldest brother at the time, I think, was 13. He was in middle school. And so she passes away kind of unexpectedly, kind of quickly in Wilcox, where we were living at the time. And we ended up staying there. My brothers and my dad, and he basically finished raising us there. We graduated high school there and went off and did our own separate things. now I'm in Yuma with Sean in our practice here. I've got a brother who's got his doctorate over in California. He's a superintendent. I have another brother up in Idaho, my oldest brother up in Idaho, who works for a nuclear research lab up there. And then I have a brother that works for Raytheon over in Tucson. So we've all got our own families and our own kids now, 35 years later. Well, over time, we have nothing back in Wilcox. And so my dad has a lot of family that's buried in a particular cemetery up in Utah, in Bear River is the name of this little town. And so the conversation started happening maybe a year and a half ago. It was obvious that he wants to be buried there. And so the dilemma is, well, if he's buried there, what about mom back in Wilcox, which is, you know, hundreds of miles away in southern Arizona? And so we started the conversation with my dad about, well, what if we move mom up now while we're alive and able to Bear River? And when you die, then you can be next to her. And so ultimately, that's what we decided to do. And so we talked about this a few weeks ago on our program. Cody and I were having the conversation about the prep that was going into all this. We had to coordinate with the cemetery here in Arizona and the cemetery up in Bear River in Utah. And both those cemeteries had to be involved because it's kind of like a quarterback to a receiver in the touchdown end zone pass kind of thing. They've got to receive that package from Arizona to Utah. And originally, Cody and I had talked about the logistics of all this, and I was under the impression that you had to have a permit for each state that you travel in. So, in other words, I had to have an Arizona-based permit to have a dead body and transport that in Arizona, and then I had to have a Utah-based license to transfer that body or move that body around in the state of Utah. That was not correct. The Arizona license that was given to me by the cemetery here in Arizona actually works in all 50 states. So I was able to travel freely with the body of my mom on the trailer, on Sean's beautiful trailer that he fixed up.
No, that's your trailer.
Yeah.
That's your trailer.
It's gone back and forth between us, but ultimately it served perfectly for what we needed to do. I originally was gonna use an enclosed trailer, but the people down in Wilcox said, no, it'd be better if it's a flatbed trailer because we need to be able to load this thing. It's about 3,000, 4,000 pounds, probably.
Holy smokes. Because it's a cement, like, it's not a sarcophagus. It's like, what do they call that?
They call it a vault, but it looks like a sarcophagus. Not all people are buried like that.
It was amazing. I was able to see it when we met up in Flagstaff, and it had intricate and carved, like, engravings on the outside of it. It was very beautiful.
It was, and I was surprised because we didn't. Traditionally, when you go to a burial service, you don't see that. Here in Arizona, we do it a little bit different. At least, I don't know if it's cemetery to cemetery in Arizona or it is in Arizona how it is, but my understanding is you don't have to have a vault. A vault is a cement enclosure for a casket. And back in 1989, I guess my dad paid for the vault service. And so when we went, I've seen pictures of the funeral at the cemetery, and I've seen the I've seen the casket and all that stuff 35 years ago. I've seen these photographs. I never saw a vault. So what happens is, well, what happened 35 years ago when we were at the service, the casket was there with my mom's body in it at the cemetery. We did the funeral. When everybody leaves, that casket's lowered down onto a cement slab, which is the bottom portion of the vault, the cement vault that we're talking about. It has kind of like a lip. When everybody's gone and they lower the casket down, then they come back, the cemetery workers, they come back and they lower the top portion of the vault on top of that cement slab, which encases the casket.
And that's the part that is has all the engravings in it, and it seems like that would take an incredible amount of work and expense to do that, but nobody even sees it, which I think is really awesome that we put so much to honor our dead, put so much effort into honoring our dead. And I know that your family didn't have excess money to spend for that type of stuff. So it just demonstrates how much your dad really endeared your mother and her memory.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when they pull it out, so the time comes to get it out of the ground. We're on a deadline. So we leave here at Yuma. It's about 5 hour drive to Wilcox. It's about, you know, it's a direct, as a crow flies, directly straight across from Yuma, about 5 hours. So we had to take I-8, you hit I-10, you go south through Tucson, and then it's about an hour, a good hour from Tucson on I-10, close to the New Mexico border is where Wilcox lies. It's in the Chiricahua National Monument area, so it's gorgeous down there, especially now after the monsoon rains and stuff. It just really greens up. And the fear is that after 35 years, nobody knows what condition the vault is in or the casket. So we leave here, Yuma. I can't remember what time we left, maybe 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, with the expectation of getting over there with the trailer in Wilcox in about 5 hours, hopefully around noon, 1 o'clock. So the day of, we're driving over there, and we get word from the funeral director, the cemetery manager guy, that one of the, I guess they used prisoners to do this digging, and one of them didn't show up. So that slowed down the digging, which is good for us because we were making, you know, we had to drive. And so we finally get there around 1:30, and they had already had everything out of the ground. When they pulled it out of the ground, the vault and the casket, all we saw was the vault, and inside of it is the casket. But the bottom portion of the vault had crumbled. After 35 years, the integrity was gone. So we don't know what condition the casket was in, but it's out of the ground. They have a backhoe. They have chains around the vault, which has the casket inside of it just hanging there. And they get that onto the trailer. It took us about an hour to get it on the trailer, just maneuver that thing because it's about 3,000 pounds, and to get it where we wanted it weight-wise. And so the idea was that, okay, hopefully we can just drive this all the way up to Utah, and they can just put everything in the ground the way that we have it on the trailer, the top part of the vault and the casket, just like that. In coordinating with the Utah people along our journey as we're driving up, because we had to meet up with you and Flagstaff, Sean, to do that speaking engagement. And so that day we had to make a decision as to what we're going to do. Do we buy a new vault up in Utah that this casket goes into? So lo and behold, in Utah, you have to be buried in a vault. I don't know if it's a groundwater issue or whatever, but you have to be in the cemetery that we're going to. You have to be in a vault. Because the bottom portion of the vault had crumbled here in Arizona, it was unusable. And they don't have, you can't just buy the bottom portion of a vault.
You have to get a whole new one.
And it's actually the opposite. So here in Arizona, you have the slab on the bottom, the casket, and then you put the kind of like a butter dish top portion of the vault on top of the casket. In Utah, it's the reverse. It's the butter dish upside down in the ground. Put the casket in it, and then you put a slab of cement to seal it on top. So the decision was made as we're driving on the fly. We just need to do a new vault. We're not going to play around with, because timing was an issue. We had to have this all done by Monday morning when we were doing the service to put her back or to bury her. And so we just said, you know, just do a new vault. I think it ended up being $1,200 more. They said, well,
that's not bad.
No, I mean, it's not as pretty as the other one, but it's, at this point, it's fine.
Did it have any engravings on the outside?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just a cement.
The other
box.
One was beautiful.
It's gorgeous, and we kept it. We had to keep it.
Really?
We didn't have to keep it, but the cemetery is like, we're not going to keep this. You take it away.
You brought the whole thing back intact?
Yeah, so we have it. So the goal is to cut those pieces out, the intricate portions.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, we can share those among the boys.
Like at your house.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's awesome.
You can use them as decorations or something down the line. So that's the goal. Use a grinder to do all that.
When the kids are throwing the football in the house and one of those falls, that's when mom really gets mad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's haunted.
No. No. I don't mean your mom.
Oh.
Sorry.
I did.
Well,
I think he's talking about Jessica.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Just
yeah.
be upset.
Yeah, exactly. So, along the way, did you do any recreational activities?
Like off-roading with a casket on the back?
Swinging off the rope swing on a tree into the lake or
well,
something?
Well, that was after the whole service. So, it took us a few days. We took our time getting up. And
I'm looking at you, and you've got a bionic arm here. And it's because you're bicep was torn free of what is that bone, your tibia?
I don't know what the bone is. Yeah, apparently
your tibia, right?
I don't know.
Or is that your leg bone?
I think a tibia is in your leg. I think that's your shin.
It's your
The tibia I think is in the leg.
Okay, well, what's your forearm bone called?
Forearm bone.
Bending.
Okay. Yeah, your muscle, your bicep was ripped out of your forearm bone.
The radius and the ulna?
The radius and the ulna.
Okay.
So the radius it was probably ripped out of.
No, it's actually what was ripped was a tendon. Apparently we have our bicep, your biceps. It's always plural, I suppose. That's what I've learned through
really?
This. Yeah, so your bicep on top of your arm, the upper portion of your arm, is connected to this forearm bone by a tendon. I didn't know any of this until I ripped mine. But you've probably seen on YouTube. If you haven't, you can Google it or look on YouTube videos of
don't,
it happens a
don't,
lot.
Don't Google it after a big meal.
You think it's that bad?
It's disgusting.
Yeah, well, it can separate in two places. So at your shoulder or down at your forearm. The most common place is on your forearm. And it typically happens to middle-aged men. But those that are, it's a very common sports injury, I guess, is what I'm learning from all this. But yeah, I was, you know. After the service for my mom, we got that all taken care of. We ended up, because we're all together, us boys and my dad, we ended up doing a Hansen family reunion up at Bear Lake, which is near where we buried my mom. And the last day of the reunion, my brother said, oh, we should all go on a hike up to, it's called Bloomington Lake in Idaho. It's right on the border. That Bear Lake spans the border of Utah and Idaho. And so 15 minutes, you're in Idaho from Utah if you're driving around the lake. So he said, oh, we need to go up to this Bloomington Lake. It's gorgeous. And it is. I mean, we went up there. There's still snow there. That's what's feeding this lake. The snow is actually in the water, just melting into the water. That's what's creating this little lake up there. It looks like a picture of the Alps. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And so we drove up there with all the grandkids, and we hiked for maybe 10, 15 minutes to this little lake portion. And there is a place where you can jump in, and there's a rope that's been hung there, I'm sure, for years. I didn't know. Now that I've told this story to all these people, especially those people in that area, they're like, oh, up at Bloomington, yeah, we've been there, we've seen that, you know, a lot of people get hurt on that. Well, it wasn't because of anything necessarily I did wrong. I just took it a step further. You know, everybody was like swinging off of this little rock ledge. I'm like, come on, there's a huge tree right there. You can get a lot of air off the tree. So the grandkids had gone, most of them had gone, getting up the courage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I climbed up into the tree and I swung out. And as I had my right arm fully extended and yanked up really suddenly, I heard a rip like Velcro.
Because you wanted to do a backflip.
Yeah, I was going to do a backflip.
Yeah,
pull my body up.
You missed that part.
Yeah. I would have done it too if it weren't for my pesky dog.
No. Yeah. Kids.
Those pesky kids.
Yeah, so I yanked up, and at that moment it just went.
Yeah, like, literally I'm looking at your arm right now, and it's like black and blue and purple.
Oh, it's not bad.
I see yellow.
It's probably iodine. I don't know what that is. I can't get it to come off.
Well, because the surgeon had to go in there it described the surgery that they had to do to repair the ripped bicep.
Yeah, so you can have two types. Like I mentioned, it can rip at the shoulder, which is basically cosmetic. I was looking into this yesterday, actually, and then you can rip at the elbow, at that bone. If it rips at the elbow, it has to be fixed. I guess not necessarily has to be. You could probably live your life. It'll just...
gimpy arm.
Yeah, it will look weird, and you'll be limited mobility, but it has to surgically be fixed. So essentially what they do is they go in and they cut me right here at the elbow.
Nobody can see you, but okay.
Right here at the elbow pit, on my elbow pit.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then they reach up and grab my bicep muscle and the tendon that's on the end that's just ripped, and they snip that a little bit, clean it up, clean up the tendon, and then they do a ton of sutures in it. And then they drill a hole in my forearm all the way through it, my bone, that bone that we were talking about. They drill all the way through it, and then they bore through that, and then they attach at the end of the sutures that's connected to my tendon this little piece of metal. They call it a button. And then they fish that through the hole in my forearm and then yank
it's
on
it. It's a long, slender one, so they can fish it through, you know.
And it acts as an anchor.
Yeah, through the narrow part, and then it... flat, and then you just widen it out at the bottom.
And then they pull on those sutures, snug that tendon back into the bored hole that they just created. And the hope is over time that tendon will grow. I didn't know that. I thought that anchor served as, like, for the rest of my life, that's what was keeping that tendon in place. Mm-hmm. But I guess your tendon has the ability to grow back.
Yeah, re-knit itself.
Yeah, it'll start to attach in that pit that they, or that bored hole that they've done. Yeah, I don't know. That's the hope. So we'll see.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so a lot of adventures these last couple weeks.
Wow.
We have to take a break, but we'll come back to the adventures of the Hansen family after these messages.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. I've got attorney Sean Garner. We've got attorney Thomas Sparks, and we've got Cody Beeson, our audio specialist. Cody, you're going to be replaced pretty soon by AI?
Can AI press a button?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, that.
Like that.
Squelch.
Yeah.
That's my favorite button, by the way. we were talking earlier in the segment about my adventures these last couple of weeks. And Sean, you had adventures too. It was 4th of July in your family. And I know you're doing a lot here at the firm. We talked about my injury to my arm. I'm still nursing that back to health. And you mentioned that good thing I had my affairs in order. Good thing we're estate planning attorneys.
Because they put you under anesthesia.
They did.
To repair your arm.
That's the first time I've ever...
It was a massive surgery.
Yeah, I've never had anything done before, actually, to be honest. I've never broken a bone or anything like that. And the closest thing I had was in my senior year in football. I dislocated my elbow, but they just numbed it. I had an option. I was in the emergency room, and they asked, do you want local here under your armpit to numb your left arm while we try and fix this, or put you all the way out? And I said, just numb my arm. So that was the only thing I've had, and that was when I was a senior in high school. And they just, you know, yanked on it, hit it and stuff, and popped back into place. This was different. They wheeled me back, and they put a thing on my face and said, take a couple breaths, you know, calm down. Yeah. And that's the last
I remember. Jessica was calling me and making sure that, I had all of the life insurance policies out, ready to go.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about all those life insurance policies.
So, yeah, she said, will a pillow do it if he's, pretty much out of it? And I said, you might want to go a little bit, like, the whole mattress on this guy.
And that's another thing to bring up. For you that are out there, not only is the federal government wanting to know about your businesses, your LLCs. You've got to report by the end of the year if you had an LLC before 2024. And we'll talk about that later on. We're going to send out a mailer to alert those clients that have LLCs here in the state of Arizona of what they need to do. But in addition to that, if you're a business owner and you have partners, it's really smart to have cross life insurance policies to compensate the other partner in case one of you passes away.
Yeah, they call it key employee. insurance. And so if somebody that's contributing a lot to your business passes away, your business is going to suffer significantly, and it could even put you under. So if you don't have life insurance to carry you through that tough time, then that could be the end of it for your business. So that's a really good plan to have. And as well as a succession plan, it's required by the ethics portion of the bar that you have to have a contingency plan for attorneys. Although if you're the attorney that dies, I don't know that you're very concerned about you know, being held liable by the ethics committee.
Probably 95% of attorneys have nothing in place. Really, they're concerned about the files and those clients being served after their death. So,
but we do have a succession plan in place. In fact, I was here late last night just reviewing it, not because of your injury, but because Thomas has joined our firm recently, and he's part of our succession plan. And so if something happens to one or both of us, we often travel together, then we have a third tier backup plan. So all of our files, we do a very consistent filing and consistency in the way that we plan. So Thomas is trained to pick up anywhere where we left off.
Absolutely. And the thing is you and I went into business together, Sean. I didn't go into business with Brittany, your wife, and you didn't go into business with Jessica, my wife. And so if you were to pass away or I was to pass away, these life insurance policies provide a way for basically a buyout to happen.
Yeah.
So that spouse is out of the business. The remaining partner, the surviving partner, has a financial means of buying out that spouse. So you're not in business with that spouse and everything goes on hunky-dory, right? That's the goal?
That's the idea, yeah. Not only that, but yeah, you do want to have the other logistical parts of the business, how the files are run, where they're kept, how you operate and do your intake with your clients. And this applies not just for law firms, but obviously for doctors, for dentists, for any professionals, construction companies, that they need to have somebody that understands how to operate the books, where the client lists are, where the material and the vendors come from, so the business can continue. Because you'd hate for, a lot of times the entire family depends on that, and a lot of the family works for the business, and if the key person has all that information just in their head, then that business can go under just with one accident.
I think that's a common misstep by most business owners. In fact, Sean, you and I, and Tom, you were there too. We went up to Flagstaff for the speaking engagement that we talked about a few weeks ago, and we met with other attorneys in our field that are supposed to be, you know, top of the top in this estate planning area. And I'm shocked at those that the way that they run their practices, and I get worried for them in the sense of if something were to happen to them, what would happen to their clientele and things, because it's obvious that they don't have any systems in place to manage things if there's a catastrophe in their life. And I think that's a common misstep. I think most business owners they either micromanage too much, or they want to keep it close to their chest so much so that it becomes fatal if something happens to them. They become incapacitated or they pass away. It really wrecks that business. And that business is the primary moneymaker in that person's life and sustaining their family. So we, in our firm, we're always looking for ways to systemize everything we do. We want systems in place. Tom, have you experienced that as you come in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Having multiple systems that are able to check one another is just so smart that, you know, you've been able to develop here to be able to defend against anything that happens to either attorney. I think it's vital.
We travel all over the state and we present seminars. A lot of it is about estate planning in general for the public, but about a quarter of it is about succession planning and for the firms, and also putting systems in place to help firms get their business organized. Because a lot of professionals, and this isn't just attorneys, but, you know, doctors and dentists, like I say, those who are running practices, they do their learned skill very well. They, you know, drill and fill the teeth very well. They fix the bones. They do the surgeries. But what they struggle with oftentimes is the business end of it. And so we have focused a lot. And fortunately, I came into a firm where Larry Deason had a very well-oiled machine as a firm and as it operated. And so I was tutored very well on how to keep the business end of it going. And what that does is it allows me to not only be successful in business, but focus my time on doing a good job as an attorney, because I know that the business end of it is running smoothly. But you do have to, we take one day a week out, and it's Monday, and that is just a plan. That's just to go over the management to see what things are going on. And we present that to other law firms, and we help them try to get organized. What's interesting is they often tune out. And they say, oh, I know it's important. And I have a lot of people come up after we talk and say, hey, can we talk offline? Because there are a couple of things that you brought up that I really need to get in place with my firm. But, you know, whatever happened during your speech or the presentation that I didn't pay attention. And I'm thinking, why aren't you paying attention? And in fact, right after we got back from Flagstaff on Monday, we were planning again for the next week, and we were reorganizing some of the things that we could update. And I looked at Thomas and I said, do you think that those other firms, we presented to about 14 other firms, are doing this, are sitting down and planning? And what was your response, Thomas?
No, I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was obvious. That'd be nice. What bugs me most out of those forums is the idea that we're sitting there giving them information that we have seen succeed. It's not perfect. It's working for us. And we are trying new methods all the time. If it doesn't work, we ditch it.
Or fine-tuning, yeah.
Fine-tuning, mm-hmm. Yeah. We're always trying different systems and implementing different things. But what really blows my mind is those attorneys that, after we've talked about the things that are really working well for us, them saying, well, that doesn't work for me. That would never work. That will never work for me. I'm just like, okay,
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
You know better, you know, and that's okay. You know, that's what blows my mind is we're giving you for free, basically, these ideas of what you can implement in your business to be successful. And you're telling us that it doesn't work, even though we've proven it to work over and over and over again for years and years, a decade.
Well, let's give an example. Let's say, okay, so what we do in our firm is we spend a lot of time on outlining all the particular issues that a client wants to include in their estate plan. And so our outline is very, very intricate. Now, our outline is linked to different paragraphs, hundreds if not thousands of paragraphs, that are then compiled together by software to make a comprehensive trust, and or a will or a power of attorney or whatever it might be. But we are working on the actual legal aspect of it, and then we allow the paralegals to implement it into the software, and we review the final product to make sure that it came out correctly. And when we talk about that to other attorneys, they say, oh no, we just draft our trust, or we just use a template of a trust that we used previously, and that's how we do it. And for me to think about them sitting there writing the portions of the trust themselves is like, it'd be like Elon Musk going down on, you know, the assembly line of Tesla and welding parts of the cars together. Like, that's not the best use of his time, and his company would never succeed if he did that. He's got to be up conceptualizing it and then reviewing the final product to make sure that the quality control is there. But there's no way that that company could succeed if he's down there on the line. And I think it's the same thing with every other profession out there. You've got to have a manager overseeing all the production. And what I think you should do is delegate anything that you can that you don't specifically have to do, so you can focus all of your experience on the highly important and professional issues.
Absolutely. And this method that you're talking about is so much more personal to our clients, because we get to focus our energy on the real issues at hand. Most attorneys don't even get into that because they're spending so much time asking about addresses and phone numbers and little trivial things like that, instead of asking about the real issues at hand, like, is this a second marriage, and how do the kids get along with this new spouse?
And how are your assets held? Are they in your husband's name and your wife's name? Do you have a kid jointly held with it? And getting the documents in place to actually verify that.
Absolutely.
Every attorney that we talked to, I said, do you review every one of their financial documents?
Did you acquire this before you were married? Did you get it after you were married in Arizona? So there's a lot of community property issues that arise.
We put a film out there on YouTube that goes through what most people think happens in an estate plan, and what actually should happen in the estate plan. So if you Google that, it's called best practices, estate planning best practices.
I like how you called it a film, as if it was like
rich cinema.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. It is. I've watched it, and it's great. But I think the two
VHS. Yeah, you can order it. 1995.
Yeah. Just rewind, please. Yeah. Rewind.
Yes.
Be
no.
Kind, rewind,
it's on YouTube.
Please.
So just Google Deason Garner and Hansen and best practices.
The film.
The film. Yes. The two ideas I think that we're talking about here is, you know, delegation and having backup plans so not everything rests in one person's brain trust. And I had a commanding officer that I worked under a few years ago on the base who would always say, only do what only you can do. And I love that saying because it does capture the idea of your time is limited. Everyone has finite time. So you need to make sure it's invested properly. You don't want to spin your wheels doing things other people can do if you're the only one that can do something bigger. And then on top of that, but you need to be careful that not everything is built up into one person, like we said, so that way it can fail and come toppling down with one key piece missing. And that's the way the Marine Corps operates. It's a unique skill set to like a small fighting force that we have is we're compare it to like a multi-headed snake, like during the Revolution time period, right? If you, every person in a mission from the commanding officer down to what we call the strategic corporal or even the junior Marines, they are briefed on what the mission is. They don't all do the commanding officer's job, but they know where the attack is, what's going to happen with it, and what the contingency plans are if something goes south. And the reason why that's important is because in previous wars, you just have to take out the officer. You take out the officer, everyone goes running, you scatter that whole force. But with the Marine Corps, his executive officer steps up. He goes down. The squad leader steps up. He goes down all the way down to an 18-year-old is briefed on the mission and can carry it out. And that's what makes it so lethal.
Wow, that's like a gunshot right there. That makes it, that brings it all into perspective because I was recently watching, what was I watching? Something about the Revolutionary War. And it was the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And you have...
Well, we were there. We were there, and they were talking to us about it.
Oh, when we went to visit Boston?
Yeah.
Maybe it was that little film at the Tea Party boat.
Or we stood opposite of Bunker Hill, and we looked at it, and he explained what happened to it, how there was two cannons there. And I forget the name of the guy that brought the cannons up there. Maybe Cody can look that up for us. But
Dr. Warren?
No, he coordinated it, but it was this young guy. He was like this 25-year-old guy that he was very heavy, but he was doggedly determined, and he drugged those cannons. Benedict Arnold actually captured the cannons in a battle that he won up in Canada, and this individual went up there and brought the cannons back and mounted them on Bunker Hill against all odds. He drug them through mud slogs. He crossed lakes and rivers with them, and the British thought, you know, we're going to take these guys out in a few days, and then the Battle of Bunker Hill demonstrated that the ingenuity of the Americans was going to prove quite difficult to overcome.
So in the Revolutionary War, Tom, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but I've always, you watch these films and I'm thinking, you have these officers, the British officers were dressed to the nines on their horses and they're horseback and they're just sitting there, you know, and then all the infantrymen with their muskets, you know, they're all marching in step and then they would do these synchronized fire the muskets, then start loading while the other line comes up. It's very regimented, very, you know, formulaic. And I'm thinking, man, why didn't, and I think we did. I think the Americans were like, learn from the French Indian War of basically guerrilla warfare. You know, you're coming, we don't need to be in regimented lines. We just go all out. There is no politeness in war necessarily. And I think that's probably what lended to us winning the war. But I think to myself, every time I watch some of these movies, you see these officers up on horseback, I'm thinking, why don't you just take those guys out? You know, it seems like they're giving all the commands. And if you just go for the officers, the people in charge, I would think there'd be chaos. And it kind of goes to what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it does happen, you know, still where it in the field or in a foreign territory, officers won't wear their classic insignia, the ones that shiny on the collar, they'll do a subdued insignia. And for that purpose, you don't salute officers when you're in the field because it gives them
really
away. Right.
Oh, interesting.
So you still can respect them, give them their proper greeting, but you don't salute, and it's for that purpose, so they don't get taken out by a sniper who's watching the encampment or something like that.
We got to take a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law. We'll be back.
Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. I've got Sean Garner here with me. We've got Tom Sparks and Cody Beeson, and we've been talking a lot today about the happenings in our life as of the last couple of weeks and over the 4th of July week and things like that. And I talked in the very first segment about my injury to my arm and how I was left in a foreign place in Utah with an injury to my arm that needed surgery. And I'm thankful that I had my legal planning in place, because when I went to the hospital in Draper, Utah, where this sports medicine orthopedic surgeon was going to do surgery on my arm, the first question they asked was, do you have a healthcare power of attorney? Do you have an advance directive? That kind of stuff. And I can confidently and positively say, yes, I do. And my wife was with me there, and so she could have taken care of that if something went awry. And I have it all in writing. And that's really what we do here. And we talked about last segment, Tom brought in the military experience of the Marine Corps and how they have redundancies. We try to live our lives like that, at least in our firm. We try to set up systems such that we have redundancies. If something happens to Sean or to me or to Tom, or something happens to Cody, people could come in and they're cross-trained enough to step in and pick up where they left off. That's the goal.
We always have at least two people that know the job that needs to get done. And that way, if somebody gets sick or quits or passes away, then there's somebody else in place. For example, you and I are it for the attorneys. We always have two paralegals that overlap each other in their jobs. But as far as a client coming in, we try to, first of all, educate them about what estate planning is and what they can expect to take the edge off maybe what they might feel is get a nervous feeling about coming in and speaking to an attorney and not knowing all of their finances. And so we educate them, this is what it's going to look like, and all you need to do to get it started is come in and talk with us. But our secretary is going to help get that baseline information laid out for you. So when you come in, you're going to feel calm, and we're going to get right to the points of the important decisions about who you want to take charge of your legal affairs. We're going to have your kids' names, their addresses in place, so we don't have to waste time with that type of basic information, and you can leave the appointment with an actual scheduled date to have your estate plan signed and have enough of the outline created where you're going to know this is going to happen. And there's only three or four points that I've got to decide on before the signing date, and I can focus my energy on those three or four points rather than having all of these ideas kind of swarming in my mind and making it so I don't take any step.
I've had it, I know you have too, Sean, so many times where clients, we get done with our consultation and they say something like, wow, that was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And that's a testament to the systems and things that we've put together. I mean, in reality, it's very complex on the back end of things. that's our job, is to take those complex issues and make them simple and digestible for our clients to understand enough as to what's going to happen if this contingency is implemented in their life, or this particular thing happens in their life. There's a plan for that. And we've taken on the complication of drafting and designing things in such a way, a legal way, that will protect that individual and their family the way that they want it to happen. And we make that look easy. That's the whole purpose of that.
Kind of like the surgeon, you know, when you go in and talk to him, he explains the basics of it, right? The mechanics of what's going to go on. But you know that there's a whole team behind him, anesthesiologists, nurses, that are helping him get prepped, clean the surgery room, get ready to go, and also be available there in case of any type of contingency plan, in case things don't go as planned during the procedure. And he's done it hundreds of times, and so he knows exactly what to expect. And the reason that it came out so smoothly and you're here today is because he's experienced in his field.
Yeah.
You'd be a little bit more worried going in and probably have a different outcome coming out if he'd only studied this and done it once or twice a year.
Absolutely. In fact, he told me on the phone when we were leading up to surgery, he said, "I just did two of these last week."
There we go. Another person needs an estate plan.
Too late.
No, but you're exactly right. So on the phone conversation when we were talking, I asked him, well, I said something like, at the end of our conversation, before we hung up, I said, "Well, what's the name of this procedure? Because I want to look it up on YouTube. I have this thing where I'm fascinated. I watch surgeries and things like that. I'm just curious in that way."
You should have warned me before you sent me that video, though.
And so he rattled it off, and I'm like, okay, yeah, okay. I thought it was going to be like, you know, bicep tear. It's called a distal biceps tendon rupture surgery, repair surgery. And I was able to get it, you know, fumbling around with Google and stuff. But immediately I'm like, that, well, you know, okay. So he said, "But you need to be careful about Google and YouTube and stuff like that." I said, I know.
Yeah.
You know, but I just like to look at that. I actually didn't end up watching an actual surgery. I didn't want to psych myself out with an actual surgery until after. So I watched it after the fact, but I did watch like an animated version of what they do, and I sent you that. But
even that made my stomach turn.
But it really helped because that allowed me to understand what he was talking about. So when he walked me through, okay, this is what I'm going to do over the phone, I could visualize it in my mind because I'd seen it over and over again, at least 3 or 4 times on YouTube in an animated version, and I understood, okay, this. So he's going to do this. I get that. And
we do that with our clients. We send them a video that shows them in advance a sample family, and we've created this sample family, having put together thousands of plans and the most common scenarios that we encounter, and then we put that together in a film, as Adam likes to refer to it, on YouTube, and so you can watch it before you come in, and you can see exactly what pitfalls they run into with shortcuts of planning and what a comprehensive, well thought out plan looks like.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is, I wouldn't say mandatory, but we kind of consider it mandatory when people come into our office. Our paralegals are trained to encourage those that have set an appointment with us to watch that video first. It's about 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And it's just like the surgery video, like I talked about. It's an overview of what your planning options are. Maybe you already have planning. Maybe you have a will in place or power of attorney, or maybe you have a trust or something like that. This video will still help you because it goes through the basics of legal planning and those pitfalls like Sean was talking about. Just like when leading up to my surgery, I watched this animation of the surgery that I was going to have over and over and over again. And that took a lot of alleviated a lot of the stress and the discomfort that I was feeling, because I'd never been in this situation before. And because I watched that video over and over again, and then I had the surgeon reinforce through our conversations what he was going to do, and that mimicked what the video was showing me, I was ready, you know. Yeah. And I was able to be a little bit more calm. I was still, you know, a little bit on edge. Rightfully so. But
we love having clients that you don't need to understand every aspect of the estate plan, but if you can understand the basics, then we want to make sure that what we're explaining to you, we're connecting the dots. You don't just have to take our word for it just on faith, that it actually is going to make sense. And if anything doesn't make sense, we want to back up and we want to make sure that each dot is connected. You don't have to memorize them all in sequence, but you have to make sure that one connects to the other. And so by the end of it, it's very easy to conceptualize how your plan will be complete in a matter of weeks.
When planning is put together, I often get this question from a client. They'll say something like, how much do we tell our kids? Do we need to tell our kids about what we're doing and things like that, or our loved ones, whoever's taking over? I usually will respond with this answer. I'll say something like, most likely you understood or retained about 25% of what we talked about. And that's okay. That's natural. I'm not saying that you're incompetent or anything like that. It's just a lot of information. That's what we are here for. Let us serve as your source of information for those loved ones when you become incapacitated or you pass away. So I encourage them, just let them know, hey, if something happens to me, I've got everything in place. Just call Adam, call Sean, call Thomas over at Deason, Garner & Hanson, and they will walk you through the plan at that time and how it works and what your role is in it and things like that. Let us do that heavy lifting because we understand the intricacies and the complexities. And that's all you need to say. And that peace of mind is huge.
One other additional thing that we offer them too is we send them a thank you link and a congratulations email when they get their estate plan set up. And it's got a link in there that they can share the video that they watched, that their kids can now see that video too. And it won't explain their estate plan because we want to keep their planning confidential, but it will explain how the concepts of the plan work, so they know when they contact us the type of plan their parents have in place.
Absolutely. If you have any questions about what we can do for your family, or if you need planning, or you need your plan reviewed because it's been a long time since you've put planning in place, give our office a call, 928-783-4575, and sit down with Sean or myself, Adam or Thomas, and let's go over what you need, and we'll help you put it all together. Wouldn't you agree, Sean?
Yeah. I'm glad your mother is in her final resting place.
Me
and,
too.
I hope that emotionally all that went well for you, and I'm glad you shared that experience with us. It was
a neat experience for the whole family. You know, after 35 years, to put my mom somewhere where we feel like it's just right, and that was kind of confirmed over the whole trip up there and things like that. It was like she was with us. I don't know how else to say it, but
final resting place, but until the resurrection.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. But we all had closure. We just, at the very end here, it was really cool because somebody had the idea. One of the grandkids had the idea, the older grandkids, of signing the casket. So everybody took an opportunity to write to my mom on her casket, and it was really cool. So we all got to say basically goodbye. And now that we are older, me and my three older brothers, we were kids at the time, and I might have told you this before, Sean, but it's not that I feel robbed of the experience of closure with my mom dying when I was a little boy, but we boys didn't have a choice. When a loved one dies unexpectedly, you don't have a choice. You don't get to say goodbye sometimes. And this was our opportunity after 35 years. Now that we've grown up, we have our own families, time has passed. And it was just right. And we were able to say goodbye now that we understood and had an opportunity to be part of that closure. So if you guys have ever, those that are listening, have thought about moving a loved one for whatever reason, I would highly encourage it because it was just a fantastic experience for my family. We got to go. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.